So thank you for coming to my talk. Thank you very much. My name is Chris. I'm from the University of Oregon. And I'd like to thank you guys for visiting me. And I hope that you enjoy this work as much as I did. Okay, so as you can see in the title, I don't know how many of you are familiar probably with the word tomography, but maybe not so much with the word non-holonomic. I know I've sort of arrived at this word after a couple years, because hopefully what you'll see is these structures demonstrate sort of the kind of constraints that you come up with in Lagrangian mechanics, like when you roll a coin around, as I will explain. Okay, but the, I'm being silly. There we go. Okay, so all of us know the Born rule. This is great. This is the first like audience of theorists that I'm speaking to. So, okay, you guys know what the Born rule is, but I really want to start thinking about this in a different way. Nevertheless, we have this paradigm, right, of two devices. I imagine one of them can prepare states on demand, right? So I have this little button to press to prepare row. And I've got some detector which is measuring an observable. And if this light blinks, then that corresponds to some POVM element, right? I'm also going to call this the Born rule. You can think of it as any observable that you cook up from, you know, some intricate number of lights that might be blinking. But of course, I'll always think of just a two-outcome POVM. Okay, and the point is that usually you think, I have a state, I have an observable, and then the statistics that I collect have some limit according to this rule. But I want to consider, not just yet. And in tomography, you use this rule a slightly different way, right? The idea is that if I had enough observables, then with the data, I can uniquely determine any unknown state, right? And you can do the same thing if you had a number of known states with your data. You could characterize unknown observables, right? And these have nice little names. They're called state tomography and detector tomography. But I want to consider the case where maybe your devices both have errors. So this is a real problem. But I also want to consider when those errors might be correlated. Okay, so if both of these devices have errors, well, first of all, you can't hope to make any estimates, right? Because, well, we will talk about this in a little bit. And the other thing is that you need to admit that, well, the statistics that you're collecting are really an expectation over the number of times you've run this experiment of this product, right? Okay. So how do we proceed? Okay, so again, like I said, what I'm interested in is figuring out how you know if there are correlations between state parameters and observables. Okay, and well, the reason this is interesting to me is, unlike when you normally check if two things are correlated, in this situation, these two expectation values individually are not accessible, right? And I think that's interesting. Okay, so then what do you do? Well, the best you can hope to do is see if the data is consistent with pretending there are no correlations, okay? So I make this definition of effectively uncorrelated. So S is effectively uncorrelated if there exists states and observables such that you can write the data as, well, a trace of all of the above, okay? Of course, now I need to introduce the fact that I've assumed there is a Hilbert space dimension, right? And in this case, these guys are vectors of length d squared. And in that case, I would have to always include the fact that I'm saying d uncorrelated. So the data is consistent with a whole bunch of uncorrelated d-dimensional operators, okay? Operators over a d-dimensional space. Okay, but this is actually a lot easier to think about as just a simple matrix equation. Okay, so that's exactly what I'm going to do. Right, so each one of,
S are your data.
S is my data, yes.
It's uncorrelated from what?
S is just the statistics that I collect from a bunch of lights blinking. So for every S, there is a state and unobservable, which together created those statistics, right?
When you say uncorrelated, what two things you're
saying? The state and the observable, right, okay. Yes, yes. Okay, so, yes, okay,
the
so.
The statement is the data is uncorrelated, not saying state from the observable.
I guess that, yes, that is correct. Maybe I could put effectively state preparation and measurement uncorrelated, right? Okay. All right. And so if you look at it this way, so okay, right, each of these matrix elements corresponds to a pair of settings, right? And the question is, can I actually write this as a product of just a bunch of, in this case, these are supposed to represent, say, the coefficients of any linear combination of permission operators to make your states or your observables. Okay, so really this statement is just saying that the rank of your matrix has to be less than or equal to d squared. Okay, and maybe that's clear just because, in a sense, the internal dimension can't be greater than d squared. Okay, but something a little more interesting is happening. Oh, I forgot to say. So I'm going to relax the requirement for positivity. This is important, but it depends on what you're worried about. I'm going to be interested in when such expressions actually do not exist. Okay, so if they don't exist, then, well, there aren't positive operators that would work either, right? Okay, so back to the first comment. Remember I said that you can't estimate state or detector parameters. Well, written this way, it becomes more obvious why, right? It's because, well, there are all of these transformations which are equally good, right? And I like to call these transformations blame gauges just because they usually correspond to, you know, exchanging purity of your states versus sort of the ability to distinguish between certain states in your observables, right? And I mean, one point to make here is that this number is much larger than the set of parameters which just correspond to a choice of bases, right? So you can make these mean something physically if you were able to fix the gauge.
So, Chris, yes. We're also not worrying about the trace of the state?
Right. I am not worried about the trace of the state. You can think of that as you're always normalizing depending on by the number of times you hit the button. Okay, so when a light doesn't blink, there's a gauge degree of freedom there, which is either you didn't make a state, or the detector failed to recognize whether it was there. So it gets a little weird. I like to think of it instead maybe as a Stern-Gerlach experiment, and you're dividing by the mass lost by your source instead of by the mass of, say, the collection of events on a bunch of screens, right? And there may be a deficit.
And this is, again, where you're putting the blame as whether it's the state not appearing or the detector not appearing.
Right, yeah. So indeed, there is a nice interpretation for that extra one, but most of the time people think of states as d squared minus one, that's true. But I actually am not considering that here. I'm considering something a little more general. All right. Okay. Consider this with me for a second. Okay, suppose that you are now performing overcomplete tomography. Okay, and particularly you want to use twice as many settings as you would have needed to determine either observables or states, had you even known what they were. Okay. And I want you to consider the data as then partitioned into four even corners. Okay. So there it is. This is this thing I'm calling a partial determinant. Okay, it's just a simple function of the elements. And well, the reason why I care about it is because if the data is effectively correlated, uncorrelated, then that means that this quantity has a very simple value. Maybe you can see if I just plug all of these guys in there. Right, I should just get the identity. Okay. So again, this condition is no fancier than just saying that the rank of S is less than or equal to d squared. Okay. This condition is no different from saying that the rank is less than or equal to d squared. So it is necessary and sufficient, but I only have an explicit proof of the necessariness this way, right? But again, I'm interested in when this condition is actually not satisfied. So, I mean, can everybody see this is just a d squared set of equations, right? This is not actually what I'm plugging in. What I'm plugging in is the data, right? So every time this matrix doesn't equal this value, these set of values, then, well, you are measuring correlation. Okay? Yes?
For someone who doesn't do theory all the time, can you give me some insight on why that partial dependence means uncorrelation?
Because I have defined, okay. So being able to write the data this way is what I mean by uncorrelated. So I will, every time I say uncorrelated from now on, I mean effectively uncorrelated. Okay. So that's the fact that these P's and W's actually exist, right? Then I can write the data this way. Is that clear?
Okay.
Okay. So you can see it resembles the definition of being uncorrelated completely, right? In the sense that I can write a bunch of state parameters separate from a bunch of detector parameters, right? But there's always that gauge, right? So there's no unique set of P's or unique set of W's that would allow me to do it.
And practically, what are those P and W's?
Every row of this is one state, which represents every time you prepared one state, you followed a procedure or you pressed a button, okay? Then you then in principle, what that did is it created these numbers, the first row of this matrix, okay? But you don't actually know what they are because your device is fluctuating, okay? Would you like me to say that differently?
No, I'm just thinking that it should be some kind of entropy, right? Trace of your density matrix and the observable.
Right, but you don't know what the density matrix is. Okay, I mean, yeah, that's the point. You create a device, and you know that it can prepare states because you're performing a quantum experiment, but you can't. There are errors in the system.
I understand.
Okay. Okay. I mean, this is a good question, but thank you. All right. Okay. Okay, so this is necessary and sufficient, and I'd actually like to prove real quick the sufficient direction because, well, it's going to motivate the rest of this talk. Okay, so there's this notion of what I'm calling locality, which is the fact that, well, every corner, right, so say choose A, is always effectively uncorrelated, right? If you are only considering minimally complete tomography, you can actually always pretend there are no correlations, okay? So in this case, right, then that just corresponds to the fact that I can write a matrix as a product of two matrices. Okay. I actually believe this is still true even if you require positivity, so long as you allow the expectation value of the product to only fluctuate over positive operators. I really wish I could show that this is true, but I only think it's true. And in fact, if you guys have a counterexample for me, I would be very happy. Well, I wouldn't be so happy, but at least feel a little more solid about it, okay? So in fact, this one existence part is really the only reason I needed to relax positivity. But again, I'm pretty sure it's still true even if you require positivity, okay? Which is not to say that every set of data can be written as a product of things with rows that are positive operators, etc., right? You have to interpret this as an expectation value of two things that fluctuate only over a certain set. Okay, so either way, P and W exist, so I can pretend this corner is effectively uncorrelated. It is effectively uncorrelated, so I can pretend it's uncorrelated. And then I can just recycle these guys with the data to then, well, come up with another P and another W, which allows me to make the full square, right? So that if this partial determinant is one, then I can just write the fourth corner as exactly what it needs to be, okay? Okay, so, I mean, I've been using these words, but I'll say it one more time, right? Every minimally complete data is effectively uncorrelated, right? But also you might notice that these little parts of the proof are the same thing as state and detector tomography, right? You're using the existence of these guys and pretending you actually know them, like this is the states and these are the observable parameters, and therefore by this data, given these observable parameters, I know what these states are, etc. Okay. However, okay, so all of this is nice, but what this means is, well, if this isn't one, you can still think about the system as if it had states and observables. And let me, so in order to really make this clear, I'm going to move over to a toy problem, okay? And I hope it'll be obvious how this resembles what we were just talking about. Okay, so let P, Q, W, and V just be random variables, okay? And we're going to play this game that you only have the expectation values of their product, right? These products, not all products, I don't care about expectation W and V, right? So I'm thinking of these as if they're two states or two observables, okay? And I don't have these, but I want to know if there exists such quantities so that I can decompose these four numbers as follows, right? Okay. And maybe if I write it this way, it's really obvious that, I mean, these values exist if and only if the determinant is zero. Okay, which actually, I should have promised you earlier why that delta I made earlier is called a partial determinant. And it's basically because of the analogy to this problem, right? Is, I mean, just as much as you can tell if your data has singularities in it, and so long as it doesn't, then you can divide by things, and this is perfectly equivalent to a determining condition. Okay. Okay, and well, there's a nice perspective behind this, right? So here is one state and one observable setting, right? And I can always pretend that it's uncorrelated up to a gauge degree of freedom, right? So I don't actually know what the state or the observable is, but the data is always going to be consistent with a pair of the two, right? And this is true for every quantity individually, right? But if I were to fix a value for one of these, it has to be consistent with every other because they share settings, okay? And so then the point is that this WF has to be the same as W naught if the system is actually uncorrelated. Is effectively uncorrelated, okay? And, well, I mean, this puts a little more light on this quantity I call delta. It is, in fact, a holonomy, okay? Which you should be thinking in the back of your head is, actually, this is very similar to just moving a tangent vector around a sphere, except here, the base is actually just a set of four points. It's kind of weird that you can think of numbers, a 2x2 matrix, as of non-trivial rank or of full rank and somehow having curvature. But indeed, that's what's going on. Okay, so I'm going to say this in yet another way. So now I'm using these W's and V's, right, to enumerate what I like to think of these as experiments. Every pair of state and observable is an experiment. I just like to call it that. Right, and well, each of these experiments had a gauge degree of freedom, and whether you use W or P to represent that degree of freedom didn't matter, right? And well, each one of these, no matter which one you chose for your gauge degree to represent your gauge degree of freedom, they're related to each other, right, locally, but at the same time, right, they're connected to each other through the data. And so, I mean, this should be a little familiar when you're thinking about, you guys remember a notion of caloric? People used to think that heat was a stuff. And sort of realized doing this that the way we do thermodynamics is really the same thing as understanding that caloric is not a stuff. So let me explain. So we have this data that we can collect, and now I'm going to assume that the settings that I can change are continuous, just so that I can make the analogy very clear, okay? And well, okay, so is this clear? I'm collecting data, and this data corresponds to whatever P this is creating and W this is creating under the possibility that they're correlated, and I can estimate this because I can count the number of times this blinks. I guess technically I also have to be able to push this button and tell it to go. So this slider is also a button, okay? Okay, and well, I can measure how much changes in the data or log of the data actually respond to changing this setting, Similarly, I can see how much the data changes as this setting, okay? And so then any change in the data is always generated by a product of the two. And if you think about it, well, this quantity, you can just, again, pretend that it corresponds to only changing p, or the expectation of p, except that this constraint of changing the state according to the setting parameter is non-holonomic. Or, in this language, the form which represents that change is inexact. It cannot be integrated to a concept of states globally. Globally in the set space of all settings, right? That there are every, this is not consistent when considering all possible settings. Okay. All right. And so if any of you like gauge theories, I'd just like to demonstrate one more time how really this is the same thing as a Wilson line. Okay. So like we said earlier, right, we have all of these different experiments or pairs of settings that are connected to each other locally, right? Either one can represent the gauge degree of freedom, right? And these guys are connected to each other through the data, but you can think of these connections as actually just, well, integrations of these forms I just described earlier, okay? Again, I'm still talking about the toy example, but this stuff does, it gets a little more complicated, but it does carry over. And, well, okay, the point here is that these integrals over a loop are exactly the partial determinant. Okay. Again, so this is a measure of the contradiction of assuming locally uncorrelated data. Okay. All right. Okay, so potential applications. The original thing that brought this up was because, well, there are, have any of you heard of gate set tomography? There, the game is very similar, that you don't know what the states or the observables you are preparing or measuring for are. Nevertheless, you still want to arrive at an estimate. Right? So in that picture, you can think of this. You can suppose that you have a set of unknown states that you're preparing, tomographically complete, and a set of observables you're measuring for, tomographically complete. And you either include or not a gate. And you want to consider maybe these two gates are correlated with each other. Okay. Well, then this is exactly the situation we were talking about, except now these corners, right, correspond to either having applied or not applied a gate. Okay. And so then you can construct a partial determinant through this, and it'll have a non-trivial value if indeed there is a non-Markovianity. So this actually generalizes to multicuted systems as well. So you don't have to just think of state preparation and measurement correlations. Okay? You can even think of measurement-measurement correlations, etc. So I'm just flashing you a bunch of pictures that represent all of the different ways that you can construct a loop in the space of settings that has a non-trivial value when there are correlations. It seems like the most interesting application that showed up recently is whether or not these loops can actually tell if Bell inequalities are being faked. Okay, so if any of you are familiar with quantum key distribution, in particular device-independent quantum key distribution, a bunch of states are sent out and Alice and Bob don't really know if what they're getting is Bell states, for example. But they can always verify using Bell inequalities, assuming that they're actually being, assuming that they can actually trust the measurements that they're making. Okay. So in principle, they think this is the kind of situation they're in. Right? Alice and Bob choose their own observables, and then they just check whatever state they're being given. Okay, but what if indeed the same Bell inequalities are being violated, but this is more the circumstance, right? That they're being given a separable state so that Eve actually knows what's going on, but their Bell inequalities were violated because of the devices they were using. Right? This could be the case. Okay. This is something that was brought to my attention on Monday, so I didn't know if I should bring it up. But I will anyway. So if you really think about these quantities, really, again, all they're doing is this set of equations describes the manifold of rank less than or equal to, in this case, R, operators sitting in a larger space. Okay, and so this is interesting if you want to consider low-rank tomography. Okay, all right. And so, in fact, it's a better way to think about this is actually as a set of polynomial equations, just because then there's no singularities. And in fact, in this case, there's a lot of interesting questions you can ask, because I don't know if you guys noticed, but this very much depended on how you arranged your settings to begin with. So there's this weird extra thing going on, but actually there's some interesting stuff behind that as well. Okay, so...
What is C bar?
It's, I guess, the transpose of the cofactor matrix, right? So C inverse is C bar over det C, right? So it's it's the thing that you contract with a bunch of epsilons, right? Yeah, I guess I should have made that clear, right? So here all I'm doing is I'm multiplying by the determinants and then moving this guy over. Right. Yes, I should have said that. All right, so yeah, I would like to thank my advisor, Stephen Van Eng, and the University of Oregon for funding me as a graduate student. And of course, I would like to thank Perimeter for inviting me. So thank you. All right.
Questions?
So I guess you didn't mention the words fiber bundle in this talk, but when we talked before, you were thinking about fiber bundle. So
right.
Can you make more explicit what the fiber bundle is here?
Right. So every experiment, right, is effectively uncorrelated, okay? Because it's just small enough. Its matrix of data can be okay, and that would have allowed you to estimate your state or observable parameters, except that there's degeneracy.
Right.
And so that set of transformations is the fiber. Okay. It's the right. It represents the set of all pairs of states and observables which would have been consistent with the person's data. Okay.
So sorry. So the underlying manifold is the set of all possible S's. Data.
No, the underlying manifold is just the four corners that you separated the data into. Remember, we had this big matrix, and then we broke it up into four. Yeah, and so the base is just four points.
Okay, but in that case, but okay, maybe let's think about the continuous version,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm. yes.
So in that case, you have you still only have 4 points, or you have something more continuous?
You have something more continuous
okay.
in that case. Yeah, I guess you have a square.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But the square might be warped according to, well, I guess it's not warped because these aren't tangent vectors, but it, you know, the data set over it as a non-trivial.
So the points correspond to pairs of settings.
Yes. Yeah, the points are in setting space, which you
can manipulate.
Right,
so you're creating state A and measurement. And then the fiber you said is the set of possible state measurement pairs.
Yes.
That are consistent with your data.
Yeah.
So for every data, every kind of big S,
mm-hmm.
you're getting a different geometry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And exactly that geometry corresponds to correlation. Correlation is the geometry in that case. And when you have a trivial geometry, then there's just no correlation. Yeah. Yes? I guess this was a lot shorter than it was supposed to be, huh?
Questions?
So, I mean, have you thought about trying to do similar stuff in kind of other circumstances where you have some correlations? I mean, I mean, like where you have correlations in time or something between states that are prepared at time one versus time two.
Right. I mean, yeah, the possibilities are endless. Yes, I have definitely thought about it, but I just haven't had time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice if I had a more solid problem to think about. So at this point, I've had to sort of choose. And I've been spending the last couple months thinking about quantum key distribution. But indeed, how many different circumstances can you have correlations in, Will? But here, what's really important here is that you are showing that there can be, you are detecting correlations without ever making any estimates of individual parameters. But this is very different from the regular way that you verify if there are correlations. Because usually you also have access to the expectations of the individual random variables. But this is a little different. But again, you can just pretend locally that such values.
Not, let's thank Chris again.